So I have given a talk on Monday every year, Monday morning, and I've never seen rooms this full. So it's exciting to see how many people are excited about cover crops. So we know that cover crops provide a lot of ecosystem services, but the most important of which to our wetlands and our bodies of water is water quality. And in particular, I'm going to focus on the Chesapeake Bay, which covers six states and the District of Columbia. It's the largest, the watershed covers that. The bay itself is the largest estuary in North America. 18 million people live in the watershed. About 25% of it is farmland with $10 billion of output. So it's a major driver of both the economy as well as the you know, features of the landscape. But for comparison, some estimates of the sort of benefits of the bay can reach $1 trillion. So we have to balance both getting that money from the for the farmers as well as protecting all the other industries that depend on the bay. So fishing, tourism is a big one, as well as real estate because lots of people live there. And in particular, we're going to focus on the state of Maryland, which is almost entirely within the Chesapeake Bay. And so the state of Maryland actually came up with a program to incentivize farmers to plant cover crops. And they started in 2005. And just over time, that more species have been added and, more money has been allocated to the program. And so we're now at about 50% of all cash crop acres get planted into a cover crop, which is enormous compared to the national average of, 1 to 2%. I will say that it's really easy to get a cover crop in behind corn in Maryland because we still have plenty of fall warm weather. And it's easy to get wheat enrolled into the cover crop program because wheat counts as one of the cover crops in the program, which I'll talk about a little bit more. But it's really tough to get in behind soybeans for a lot of the reasons that other speakers from the upper Midwest have talked about, just because it comes out late in the season and it's really cold. So focusing on getting the farmers behind the soybeans is probably a lost cause, but we can always hope for the best. So, like I said, the state pays farmers to do this, and this isn't just, a subsidy. This is a real incentive. Some farmers are trying to make a profit on it. And what we would expect, early planted cereal rye, no-till drilled, we think that's going to be the best-looking cover crop, and so that's what we pay the most money for, $75 an acre. Cereal rye always gets a $10 bonus over all the other cover crops. Cover crops containing legumes, mixes, or pure legumes always get just a base payment. They don't get any kind of incentives, which when you're focusing on just water quality, just preventing nitrogen leaching into the bay, that's really important for some of the other agroecosystem functions like soil health or building up your organic N pools. Maybe it's not so great. But all of these cover crops have to be planted by November 15th. They have to be certified with your soil water conservation district. And they can be terminated no earlier than March 1st. So as Brianna talked about, yes, that leaves a big window, but at least you're getting some green up in the spring. And there can be no fertilization of the fields until after March 1st. And you'll see on the right-hand side, there's also the harvested. So like I said, wheat is counted as part of the program. You get a lot less money for it, about half as much, but it's just kind of like a little bonus on top of your grain production. So small grain production does get a little bit of a subsidy, and that drives some of the interest in the program. So my main objective is assessing the performance of crops, and I'm going to assess them both on biomass, and we know that that drives all the agroecosystem functions we're interested in as scientists, as well as in scavenging, which is the explicit goal of the program. We identified sites here on the eastern shore of the Chesapeake Bay, and you can see by these county labels, that's where all of the top enrolled counties are in the state, except for three that are up near the PA border. So in particular, our sites are in Queen Anne's County, Caroline County, and Talbot County, which are the number 1, 3, and 4 cover crop enrolled counties. So it's really the hot spot of activity for agriculture in the state. Between 2005 and 2011, we collected biomass from about 30 farms a year, 224 total sites. So this is, you know, an observational study. We didn't go out and impose specific experimental conditions. So there's going to be a lot of noise and variability. And primarily we focused on collecting biomass, which we sent off for, or actually in-house did CN analysis, so that we could look at uptake. And so we took measurements at winter going into dormancy of the cover crop, and then in the spring after green up, right before when the farmer was planting on planning on terminating, or about that same time if the farmer was going to be harvesting it for small grain, using half-meter quadrats with five replicates per site. So some of these farms were repeated multiple years. Some of them were just, only 1 year. So again, that kind of gives you an idea of some of the noise that we're going to have in the data. These were all fairly fine-textured soils. Coarse-textured soils. So ranging from silt loams to sands, almost all ultisols, and from just a handful of MAP units, even though it was across this whole tri-county area, with relatively low organic matter. So just picture, you know, a beachy, sandy soil that you would see on the coastal plain. As I mentioned, there are different species that are planted. Cereal rye gets the highest benefits, but a lot of people are interested in these other cover crops like forage radish, canola, as well as some of the legumes like crimson clover or hairy vetch, and we also had some peas in the mix. But these only account for about 10% of all the enrollment in the program, so we're really just going to focus on the cereals, and primarily barley, wheat, and cereal rye. And we see the planting date really drives some of the variability that we had. Like I said, it's easy to get a cover crop in behind corn, and so that's why you see this wide range of planting dates in those red circles. Those two vertical bars are the cutoff for early planting and for late planting, depending on when you or how much money you get from the state. And then the blue squares are the soybeans. And so you can see that those are later, there's less variability, there's fewer sites. The open circles on the right-hand side indicate farms that are in the small grain program, and the closed circles represent the termination dates that we went out and took samples. So that was for wheat. Here's for cereal rye and barley. You see a similar pattern, and this is all of the years. So some years you might be able to get in a little bit earlier depending on the weather, but you really can't get any earlier than Hessian fly free date, which is a big problem in our area sometimes. But you do see occasionally, for example, that one farm planted cereal rye, you know, at the beginning of September, which was just absurdly early. You can also see that farmers are kind of clustering right before the deadline. They want to get it in, you know, the day before, so they can push it as late as possible and still get that money. But it's not a huge effect. It is really kind of spread out. And we see that planting date makes a huge difference because of growing degree days. In the fall, we have very little variability in our growing degree days. If you plant early, you might get 1,200 growing degree days by the time of dormancy, whereas a really late planting date, you get almost none, but it's very consistent year to year. However, then going into the spring, some years we have really warm springs where you can put on an extra 1,000 growing degree days before termination, and some years you have very cold springs where you might only get another 200 growing degree days before termination. And so in particular, you see 2008 there was a cold year, 2009 was a warm year, and so just back to back, those were very different years. And that made a huge difference in terms of the actual biomass that we observe. In 2008, which was the cold year, you see very little biomass, 1,000 kilograms per hectare, even in the spring, and then you have, you know, four times that in the spring of 2009. So variability always drives everything that we do, but you can't predict the future. You don't know if you're going to have a warm spring or a cold spring, so it's important to get an early planting date. So we're going to look at one model to look at biomass, and this is previous crop crossed with cover crop species and establishment method within farm. And we saw that there was no significant difference within any of the species following corn or soybeans, except that cereal rye performed better with no-till drilling and conventional drilling. which you would expect due to better soil to seed contact. But it's interesting that we didn't see that effect for any of the other panels there. Comparing within species, within species across methods, you see the rye generally outperforms the wheat and the barley, but occasionally the barley is intermediate to the wheat and the cereal rye. But this is a fairly poorly fit model, R squared of 0.25. Even for ecological work where we're looking at this observational study, it's difficult to justify that sort of model fit. So instead of looking at previous crop, which has some information about planting date embedded in it, let's look at this across growing degree days as a continuous model. And so here on the x-axis we've got growing degree days, on the y-axis we've got cover crop biomass. Again, you can see there's a ton of noise. So let's look at just the model. So these are the regression lines fit there. And R squared of 0.42, a lot better for this sort of study. And again, we saw the same results. If you have a good establishment method for cereal rye, you're going to get a better cover crop out of it in the spring. And by good, I mean one with high soil seed-to-soil contact. But again, no difference with the wheat and the barley. And again, comparing that across species, we see that rye outperforms the wheat and the barley, except for in the no-till, where barley was intermediate to the wheat and the rye. So then that brings me back to what is the ultimate goal of this program, which is to get the most N scavenged per dollar. So cereal rye up here on the top left is the one that gets the most money with early planting, and then as you move to the other species, you get a little bit less money, and then as you move down in planting date, you get even less money. And I went ahead and pooled those two treatments that were not different in terms of establishment method. And here I've split it by which program they were in. So you remember that the harvested gets a lot less money, but farmers are going to be treating that crop a little bit better because they want to get an actual harvest out of it. Whereas the traditional program, you get a lot more money, but maybe the farmers don't give it quite as much attention, maybe terminate it earlier. Well, obviously terminate it earlier. And so you see that for wheat and barley enrolled in the harvested small grain program, early planted, we got a lot better biomass per dollar spent. The cereal rye, again, really good performance, and so we also got a lot of biomass N per dollar spent, but that was where we spent the most money. So sort of bang for your buck, it's this small grain program, it turns out. And, you know, as we would expect, we saw diminishing returns as you go later in the season. So the big conclusion is that cover crops behave like crops. You got when you have good seed-to-soil contact, early planting, if you treat it like a cash crop, you're going to have good performance. And so some of these small grain subsidies can achieve some of the goals of the cover crops that we want as scientists at a lower cost to the state and to the taxpayer, which I should mention was $22 million this past year, so it's not exactly chump change. And so with that, I'd like to take questions.
We have time for some questions.
Yes. The $22 million comes from the state of Maryland, and it's administered by the Maryland Department of Agriculture and the Chesapeake Bay Trust, I believe. Yes, soybeans are harvested usually about 3 or 4 weeks after corn is harvested in our area. Thank you.